You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded November 27th, 2024. Well, it may have taken 4 years and 14 days, but the Horde has breached the gates, and there's nothing for it but to wait and watch the Trumpocalypse unfold January 20th, 2025. At least that's how something more than half of America and most of the rest of the planet feels, but they're dead wrong. The prelude to the Trump sequel is playing out already in the form of his announced picks for high office. While it's tempting to laugh off the coming carnival and the buffoons currently being crammed into the tiny car, there's a sinister undertone to this second coming, the kind of creepiness only a scaring painted clown can elicit. Professor Jeremy Kuzmarov is a scholar, journalist, and author who writes for and serves as managing editor to Covert Action magazine. Kuzmarov's book titles include Obama's Unending Wars, The Russians Are Coming Again, written with John Marciano, and his latest Warmonger, How Clinton's Malign Foreign Policy Launched the U.S. Trajectory from Bush 2 to Biden. His recent article at CAM, Marco Rubio, an abhorrent choice for Secretary of State, prefaces the sophomore Trump presidency, an administration that could prove not only worse than the first, but even more disastrous than the Biden one it replaces. Jeremy Kuzmarov in the first half. And in recent weeks, the outgoing American president has signed off on the use of advanced U.S. missiles by Ukrainian forces against targets inside Russia. The launching of ATACMS rockets soon followed the Biden announcement, raising the stakes in the 2.5-year-long conflict to catastrophic dimensions. Or as Russian President Vladimir Putin dryly noted, the conflict had now acquired elements of a global character. Last week, Russia answered with devastating effect, debuting the so-called Oreshnik hypersonic missile, reportedly destroying the Ujamash weapons plant where ATACMS and other advanced Western weapons systems were stored. But if the Oreshnik was meant to deter their future use, it was less successful than the Kremlin might have hoped. Monday, 13 more ATACMS were launched against Russian targets in the Kursk region. John Helmer is a journalist and author who spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears and has, as well as serving as advisor to governments at the highest level, too, been a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism. His article, The Ukrainian War After the Penny Has Dropped, Make That the Oreshnik, examines the recent but not latest escalation in the war over there. John Helmer and Biden's cataclysmic departing in the second half. But first, Jeremy Kuzmarov and Après le Déluge, Le Donald. Welcome back to the program, Jeremy.
Great to be with you.
Well, it's always fantastic to speak with you. Now, Jeremy, the rolling out of Team Trump 2 has been a gag fest from the start for those on the left, and that's no surprise, but some of his appointees really are shocking. You start with the best known of the lot, Marco Rubio. Jeremy, why do you call Trump tapping him for Secretary of State, quote, abhorrent?
Well, Rubio is a loathsome figure from within the Beltway. You know, he's tied in with the right-wing Cuba lobby in Miami, Florida, that adopts, you know, very hardline policies towards leftist leaders in Latin America. You know, he supported a crippling economic embargo on Cuba that devastated their economy and regime change operations there. He was tied in with these right-wing figures in Venezuela who are behind coup attempts against the socialist government in Venezuela, including Juan Guaido and Leopoldo Lopez, who triggered these violent anti-government protests in 2013 that led to him being charged with terrorism and led to a lot of deaths within Venezuela. And he's also close with the El Salvadoran leader Nayib Bukele, who had adopted the draconian anti-crime measures reminiscent of Rodrigo Duterte in Philippines that's resulted in huge human rights abuses and oppressive conditions in El Salvador's prisons and sweeps where a lot of innocents have been targeted. And, you know, he's concentrated power among himself. You know, that Rubio claims to, you know, want to oppose authoritarianism in South America, around the world, yet supports most authoritarian leader like Bukele. And then, you know, Rubio had been an Iran hawk, a China hawk. He's particularly known as a China hawk. So he's very, hawkish, right-wing figure. And, you know, it really punctured the illusion that some had of Trump as a peace candidate. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of people were lost in this election because the Biden administration was so hawkish and is, you know, threatening World War III with Russia right now, sending missiles to Ukraine to attack Russia directly, and billions in arms to Ukraine and billions in arms to Israel. And a lot of people are unhappy with those policies. But, you know, so Trump made some claim in the campaign to be a peace candidate, and people, I guess, believed him, or they wanted to believe him. Like in past elections, you know, people turned to Obama as a peace candidate, and yet he ramped up the drone war and bombed 7 Middle East countries. So it's kind of business as usual in the United States, and peace-oriented people really have nowhere to turn to within the two-party system.
And in that context, is Rubio any more or less a disaster, or hawkish, or a warmonger than anyone else in the cabinet, any other cabinet members announced so far?
Yeah, these other choices, like the defense secretary has openly fascistic viewpoints. Pete Hegseth, firstly, he defended war criminals and the prosecution, you know, of soldiers who committed egregious war crimes in Iraq, like Eddie Gallagher, who, like, tortured to death a 17-year-old kid in Iraq, and these kind of crimes. And Hegseth was, pushing for the exoneration of these soldiers who are being prosecuted. I agree that it's really the higher levels who put the soldiers in an environment where war crimes are going to be committed on a systematic level. So I agree the prosecution should go higher up. But that doesn't exonerate a soldier if he's done something horrible and in violation of a military protocol, like torturing a 17-year-old boy. And I think, you know, taking trophies of body parts, those kind of things. So with Hegseth, we may have less war crime prosecutions in them, you know, now that he's head of the Pentagon, although he has called for an end to the revolving door and a moratorium on the ability of people who work for the Pentagon military generals to work for defense contractors. And that's what we saw with his predecessor, Lloyd Austin, who was on the board of directors of Raytheon, then was appointed to the head of the Pentagon and gave billions of dollars in contracts to Raytheon, leading weapons producer. So, I mean, I don't know if Hegseth will fall through on that, but he is calling for a moratorium on that. But other of his views, yeah, seem to be fascistic, like he rails against, the encroachment of diversity in the military, and that's kind of sapping the military spirit. And he called Trump said, oh, he's a guy for peace, but like his vision of peace is basically to wipe them all out. Like he's like the liberals hamstrung the military and they're too soft, but we've got to just, you know, wipe out ISIS. You know, and this led to ISIS and Hamas being emboldened to carry out attacks, and this caused wars, so we should just wipe them out. So basically, I mean, he's calling for like genocidal policies and killing everybody. And then I guess you can have a peace, as one of the Greek philosophers said, you know, they called it peace after they made a wasteland or something. That seems to be his vision of peace.
Or the old aphorism, kill them all and let God sort it out. How settled are these picks, though? We saw this last time when Trump came in, either very short-lived cabinet appointments. The revolving door became a joke in the first year of the first Trump administration, how many people were chucked out. And we're still months away. These picks have to be confirmed and so forth, even though Trump has control of all levers right now. How likely is it that these picks will actually fill the posts that they're today being named for?
Well, the Republicans now control the Senate and Congress, so it's likely they could go forward. I mean, I think the ones who had to drop out, that's serious, like Matt Gaetz, because of these crimes he's been charged with, or, you know, a congressional investigation into possible sex trafficking and paying off underage minors to have sex with them. He had to drop out as attorney general. I think Trump had no morality, so he was fine appointing him, but there was some pressure on him. Hegseth was also accused of, sexual assault of a woman, but the case was settled out of court, so it may not hold back his appointment. I don't think, unfortunately, with this Congress, his fascistic views seem to bother too many people, certainly not on the Republican side, but even many Democrats, I don't know if that would bother them. They seem to embrace his kind of ultra-hawkish worldview. It's likely they will go forward. And then, you know, you have all these messianic Christians like Mike Huckabee, the new U.S. ambassador to Israel, and Hegseth and some others seem to have the same view in Rubio. You know, they're Christian fundamentalists, and they believe the Bible gave the state of Israel and Jews certain land, like in the West Bank, which they call Samaria and Judea. They don't even call it the West Bank. And they're not rational thinker. The disturbing thing is they don't think rationally. They have this, and this is the Israeli far right, believe they have some imperative from God and biblical legitimacy in taking over Palestinian lands and basically exterminating the Palestinians. So that's the worldview you now have in the Trump administration that's going to ally with the Israeli far right to continue their, you know, murderous operations and their pursuit of their goal for greater Israel. So, I mean, the Middle East looks like a further escalation of U.S.-Israeli militarism and atrocities against the Palestinians, unless the blowback is too big on the Israeli that they can't continue to go forward, because we are getting reports of high numbers of suicides and mental illness of Israeli soldiers. The Israeli economy is starting to suffer from boycotts, and the tourism industry is destroyed in Israel, and that's one mainstay of their economy. So the violence may stop simply because Israel can't continue too far. It won't be because of people in the Trump administration who are these messianic Christians pushing for hardline, continued Israeli violence and expansion.
Not to mention the outflow of Israelis. I know many applying to get to Canada. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Jeremy Kuzmarov. Jeremy is a scholar. He's a journalist and author. He writes for and serves as managing editor to Covert Action magazine. His book titles include Obama's Unending Wars, The Russians Are Coming Again, co-written with John Marciano. And his latest is Warmonger, How Clinton's Malign Foreign Policy Launched the U.S. Trajectory from Bush 2 to Biden. We're talking today about his recent article at CAM, Marco Rubio, an Abhorrent Choice for Secretary of State. Well, of course, Rubio, his bailiwick has, and being from Miami too, his bailiwick has been South Central America. And we've heard some pretty bellicose language coming out of the Trump camp, I suppose, right now, regarding NAFTA, which has got a lot of Canadians worried because this announcement that day one, Trump says he'll bring in a 25% tariff on both Canada and Mexico. Of course, and I know, because Jeremy, you are Canadian, that you know what the CBC is all about, and it's all nothing but this story today. I don't know what's going on in Mexico, though. Do you have an idea with this fantastic new president, Sheinbaum, true leftist and protege of the outgoing Obrador? Has Rubio made comments about Mexico and its left, more left turn?
Well, one danger is that there's talk in some Republican circles, going after the Mexican drug cartels, even the bombing Mexico, targeting those drug cartels. I don't know if that's just kind of macho rhetoric. As far as NAFTA, well, it does present an opportunity. I mean, NAFTA, largely benefited U.S. corporations and multinationals and helped decimate Mexico's agricultural industry by allowing cheap imports, cheap American imports with decline in tariffs. And it allowed more drugs to cross the border with greater trade and loosened regulations. That could potentially be a positive for all three countries if there's some renegotiation and it stimulates more investment in local industry. So it's not necessarily a negative if NAFTA is renegotiated, or, you know, there may be short-term negative consequences for Mexican or Canadian economy, but it could force leaders of both countries to reorient the economy a little bit and to favor domestic industry, so, or agriculture. So I don't think that's necessarily something that would be bad in the long term. Perhaps they would try and destabilize Mexico and do what they've done in a country like Venezuela, although, you know, to overthrow a left-leaning government. Although I don't think Sheinbaum is as radical as, you know, the Venezuelans or Nicaragua. They're more socialist. I mean, she's not really a socialist. She certainly is better than a lot of the past leaders and has some progressive instincts and sensible policies she's advocating for, but she's not a socialist. She doesn't really directly threaten U.S. corporate interests, I don't think, in Mexico. So I don't know if they would go that far.
She's threatened the weapons manufacturing industry in America, blasting critics in the states of the drug war, saying that the weapons are 90% of them are coming straight from the United States, and with something that they describe as an iron river of guns from America.
Well, she's correct about that, and that's been a serious problem for Mexico and the United States. You know, had been a major source of problems in Mexico. You know, the Plan Merida initiated under the Bush and Obama administrations was a catastrophe, provided, you know, basically arm the Mexican military to go after only certain cartels, certain favored drug cartels they didn't go after. And it just, you know, created vicious cycles of violence. And, you know, they're flooding Mexico with weaponry. And, of course, the United States provide the demand for these drug cartels. So, I mean, if the United States ever focused on developing better rehabilitation programs and cleaning up American inner cities, you'd have much less drug use in the United States. And that would weaken the cartels rather than ramping up military support like under the Plan Merida. So, yeah, Obrador was also critical of the drug war. And I mean, I think it's good these Mexican leaders are speaking out. I don't know if doing that would get them assassinated, you know, target of regime change by the United States, because, again, the U.S. would tend to go after socialist leaders who are really trying to transform their political economy. And I don't necessarily see that among the Mexican leaders. So there may be some friction, but I don't know if we'd see a regime change operation like in Venezuela or Nicaragua.
Well, it's funny because I took it that Claudia Sheinbaum was more genuine, and that's exactly what she wanted to do. Maybe it's just because that's something that I want to see. We also had the Operation Fast and Furious, where 14, 15 years ago, where the ATF was sending drugs or weapons rather into Mexico to the drug cartels. On the sort of spurious logic that they would be able to track the weapons when they were committed in crimes after the fact, because they had the serial numbers of the weapons, presuming that they were still on the guns or something like that. But it seemed ill-designed plan from the start, and Mexicans remember it well.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Sheinbaum. She is left-leaning, but I don't know how drastic changes she can implement right now as far as restructuring Mexico's economy or, you know, taking drives against U.S. corporations. But, yeah, as far as the Operation Fast and the Furious, I agree that was a disastrous program that was exposed, that the U.S. Was providing weapons to drug cartels indirectly and sometimes even directly. And that, you know, pointed to the failure of Obama's drug war, that they're spending all this money on the Plan Merida, and yet they're flooding Mexico with weaponry. And they claim, you know, it was because they could track the weapons and that was a way they could target the drug cartels, but really it was just intensifying the violence. And that's why you have a backlash among Mexican leaders, both Obrador and Sheinbaum, who are progressive oriented leaders who have the best interests of Mexico in mind. And that creates friction with the United States, and the military industrial complex seems to thrive on violence. And, you know, that may have been the purpose behind the Plan Morita, was just to create more violence and chaos in Mexico. And that would ramp up a further military, justify further U.S. military aid to Mexico to the benefit of the military-industrial complex.
Well, in your article on Rubio, and again, it's Marco Rubio, an abhorrent choice for Secretary of State. You can find it at covertactionmagazine.com. Jeremy, you talk about the senator's disingenuousness and his phonying up of his own biography. His family came from Cuba, and he characterized himself as, or them at least, as fleeing the hated communists and so forth, when the story turned out to be entirely reversed.
Yeah, exactly. He claimed that his parents fled Castro's oppression after the Cuban Revolution, but really they came in the 1950s to flee the oppression of an American-backed dictator, Fulgencio Batista, who Castro overthrew. And, you know, he was trying to play up his credentials before the right-wing base in Florida, who supported terrorist activity for generations now, targeting Cuba, including direct terrorist attacks, starting with the Bay of Pigs. That community in Florida, a lot of them were the wealthy in Cuba who had supported the Batista dictatorship, were major landowners, and Castro had nationalized the land and promoted land reform and nationalized a large industry. And Rubio's tied with the Fanjul family, who are these Cuban exiles who own huge sugar plantations in pre-Castro Cuba and are rabid, anti-Castro hawks. And they've given him huge amount of money over the years and supported his career from the time he was in the State House. And he was also close with the Bush family and was a protege of Jeb Bush. His lying about his family just epitomizes his lack of ethics that we've come to expect from politicians in America these days. A lot of them lie about their family background. I found that in my study of Obama, that he was totally deceitful about his family story that he told in this best-selling memoir he wrote. So unfortunately, politicians are regarded as worse than used car salesmen in the United States. And I think Trump, tried to seize on that and develop this persona, this anti-establishment figure who was going to clean the swamp. But, as we know, that's just political rhetoric. Trump is the biggest con man of them all. So it's not a pretty picture, really, when you look at Washington and politics in the United States.
Well, I know in Cuba they certainly are worried about it right now. And you write in your article about the brothers Fanjul that including supporting large government subsidies for their business, keeping wages low, protecting them from being held accountable for abhorrent labor practices, and eviscerating environmental laws that have enabled them to pollute Florida's Everglades. It's not only the Cubans that are worried, though, about what Rubio represents at state in a new administration. He's terrible on China and Taiwan as well, at least from the position of the Chinese, where the quote from them is that he is a nightmare coming true. Isn't this just exactly what Trump wants, though, this sort of everyone to be afraid and to kowtow preemptively to his administration, the easier to do business?
I think so, yeah. I mean, Trump, America become a bully around the world, a global empire with over 800 or perhaps 1,000 overseas military bases, and overthrown for generations now, overthrown leaders to challenge U.S. primacy. So in a way, it's fit to have a leader like Trump, who wants to behave like a bully and appoints these kind of people who are a nightmare to American adversaries. And Rubio is very close with the extreme elements in Taiwan who wanted to, Taiwan was used as a base in the Cold War for covert operations, for training of commando units to infiltrate China and to carry out covert operations across Southeast Asia, when it was ruled by Chiang Kai-shek and his son Chiang Chun-kiao. And I think Trump wants to transform Taiwan into that position again, to use it to threaten China. And they've heavily armed I mean, I think Rubio was supporting separatist elements in Taiwan who want to directly separate from the Chinese mainland, even though Taiwan is considered to be part of China and recognized as such, even by U.S. presidents and officially. But under the table, Rubio and Nancy Pelosi, when she went there, also was kind of favoring separatist elements in Taiwan. But that's, yeah, part of this anti-China policy that Trump is promoting, and Rubio is a good figure to carry that forward. And the I've done some articles on the Biden administration was building, investing in revamping military bases in Pacific islands that hadn't been used since World War II, that were used in World War II as launching pads for bombing attacks into Japan. And that's really preparing the groundwork for a potential war on China. And yeah, we see a lot of continuity, particularly in foreign policy between administrations. I mean, the character and rhetoric might be a little different, and Trump and some of the people he appoints are more kind of bully types, these macho, openly in some cases fascistic, where the Biden, emphasizes diversity and maybe gives a bit of a nicer image, but they're doing the same thing. They're ramping up U.S. military base networks in Southeast Asia, signing new agreements. I mean, recently, the Biden administration signed a new agreement with Philippines to expand the American military presence in the Philippines, bases there, give U.S. more access to Filipino bases, add potential launching point for war on China, and they're cozying up with the dictator of Philippines, the son of Ferdinand Marcos, one of the worst dictators during the Cold War. So I think we're just going to see a lot of continuity, and maybe Trump will take it to the ultimate level of an actual hot war, although he promised his base he wouldn't start any new wars. So politically, that might be a bit tough for him if he doesn't want to alienate people who supported him. But we seem to be heading in that direction.
Well, especially in, right now in Ukraine and Israel, in their war against the Palestinians and their neighbors in Lebanon, a ceasefire announced there just last night. We'll see if how real that is. Jeremy, we're fast out of time. As usual, there's way more to talk about than we have time for. But before we go, I know that Covert Action Magazine is still conducting its fall edition of its fundraising effort. How do people help keep the kind of journalism that you guys are doing over there alive?
Yeah, please support us. You can go to our website, www.covertactionmagazine.com, and become a subscriber to our magazine for only $25 per year. And you'll get weekly newsletters, and there may be some side benefits you may be able to get through that membership. And it really helps us. So just for $20 a year or $25 a year, that really keeps us in business. And I think independent journalism is vital today. I mean, we see so much of the media is just kind of bought off by the military industrial complex or corporate interests, and they're not providing the truth to the public, and they're not really investigating in depth these kind of policies we've been discussing today that are leading to serious violence around the world and potentially a world war. So we need more people who are well-informed, capable of pushing back against these very dangerous tendencies, policies that are being carried out by both parties. And in Canada, I mean, Canada is going along with a lot of the aggressive U.S. foreign policies, whether Ukraine or China. So we need to build solidarity networks across North America of progressive people who want to rein in the military establishment and establish genuinely, progressive politics and transformation.
Yeah, hallelujah, and be more like Mexico, maybe. Jeremy's recent article again, Marco Rubio, an abhorrent choice for Secretary of State. CovertActionMagazine.com is where you'll find it and a lot of other great stuff. Thanks again for coming on, Jeremy. I want everyone else to stay tuned. I'll be back after the break with John Helmer, and we're going to talk about this new super weapon that the Russians used a couple days ago, the Arashnik, and what it means for the war in Yugoslavia, or wrong war, Ukraine, and the rest of the world going forward. Thanks again, Jeremy.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
when nothing is as it's presented.
It's a bit like discovering that your favorite uncle that's taken you for walks in the park, however, that he's really a serial abuser.
You need a different source. Guerrilla Radio, a century of news every Thursday and Saturday.
Any people who might be fool enough to try, come to fetch her body.